RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Friday Overcast Val and
Beans. It's overcast here, too, as well, also.
Something in common.
Yes. So, we have a lot to talk about today, Frank.
Yep.
You know it. I know it. The American people know it.
The real question is, how deep do you want to go?
Well,
because you know me.
I do know you. I know you very well.
I wear lead hats, not tinfoil hats.
Well,
lead.
Look, we can touch upon a bunch. Listen, one thing that I hate doing is talking about something that I haven't looked into myself.
I know. That's the difference between you and I.
Yeah.
This is
very true.
That's why I'm the color guy on this broadcast.
Because I'm seeing your lead. I'm seeing it. I'm seeing the undercover officer was actually rioting and looting. I'm seeing they work together and nobody knew this guy was a cop. And we're talking about Minnesota, obviously Minneapolis, where the city has now burned to the ground. Quite literally, there is no other way to say it. They've burnt down police stations, every business, so much so that people actually started Yesterday, I was making an argument on Twitter and somebody said to me, but these are all white owned businesses, so it doesn't matter. This is literally what was said to me. And yeah. I said, okay, seriously? Like, that's where we're at now. As long as the business is owned by a white person, it deserves to be burned to the ground because that's a race war.
The programming has taken, for some people at least, the programming has taken.
Yeah, well, so they've destroyed their city. And people from outside the city have destroyed the city, as we have evidence that there are obviously people being bussed in from all over the place, Chicago, everywhere else, right, to come in here and cause chaos. And the fire department and the fire department and the police have just decided to give up.
Yep. Which I think that everybody should take very, very close note of, especially you Second Amendment folks.
Yes.
You anti-Second Amendment folks especially.
Please
take very, very close attention because, you know, on the day I know you say, well, what do you need a gun? Well, on the days that you're not looking at the police force as a white supremacist arm, like a militant wing of white supremacy, you are going to be looking for their help. And when you see that when the shit really hits the fan and you're seeing what shit hitting the fan looks like. I mean, an angry mob burning down private businesses and police stations alike is something you don't want to get in the way of, okay? And nobody's going to be coming to stand guard outside of your house. It's you are all alone, okay, once the illusion is gone.
Amen. And so there was on the other day, there was an interview with some guys that decided they were going to go start protecting some businesses because the police wouldn't do it. Brought their weapons, went down there, stood there and guarded those buildings, saying, you know, before there were police, there were Americans and here we are. And what's happening there is terrifying for several reasons. Now that the protesters or rioters or whatever they are, not protesters, rioters, are saying they're going to go to the suburbs if they don't get what they want. What is it exactly that they want?
Yeah.
We're going to go start burning people's houses down now? Because why? Because what? These people are... Yeah. This is design. It's by design. That I'm not going to put any hat on for. It's just the truth.
I get very repetitive with the things I say because there's nowhere other way to get to it. I said that those who are involved in this, now there are dupes who have been emboldened to go along for the ride and, you know, they see something that they can gain from this in the immediate, like to be able to walk through Target and have a shopping spree, a spontaneous shopping spree. There are people who are just going to get sucked into the whirlwind. But other than that, those who are behind this, they are the 1917 Bolsheviks. They do not care. about lining up women and children against a wall in a basement somewhere and killing them. Mm-mm. They don't care. I mean, this is not. This used to be something that was a crazy fringe something to say 10 years ago. Oh, calm down, calm down. When people say, well, we're going to start marching into the suburbs to destroy innocent people's lives because of a death related to police action inside the middle of the city, which, as I said last night, anyone who thinks that the immediate arrest, everybody said, well, all you got to do is arrest the police officer. Anybody who thinks the immediate arrest of these police officers involved in this death would have prevented what's happening right now has not been paying very close attention the last 5 to 7 years. This is the way it was always going to be in this position, in this situation in particular, and also just this year. This is what 2020 was always going to be. Always.
I this is exactly when there was the Bernie Sanders argument. We were saying this was going to happen. I mean, this was the plan. This is the plan.
They said that they're going to burn down what? Wisconsin?
Yep.
They're going to burn down Wisconsin if he was screwed out of the nomination.
Yep.
That was what they were willing to do to their own people. And the same mentality is at work here.
Agreed. Agreed. And it's pretty terrifying to see. I mean, they're not doing anything to stop it. I mean, they're just literally... Keith Ellison is the AG there, okay? Should I say any more?
Oh, I could say a lot more than that.
It's a Democrat-run state. It's a Democrat-run town.
It's a refugee
city.
Camp.
It's a refugee city. Amen.
This particular city is a refugee camp. This is how Ilhan Omar was. You know, Tracy, I brought this up last night just to give a little bit more background of what kind of a city we're dealing with here, because Minnesota isn't as glamorous to talk about as a California or Florida, Texas, New York.
Exactly why they went there.
Exactly. And in the Obama administration, they really ramped it up. Over the last 20 years, the amount of Somali refugees that were stuffed into that city. Now they have a representative of Somalia in the House of Representatives. But that's besides the point. Do you remember back in 2018, we're in the lead up to the midterm election that actually elected Omar? And it was the year of the migrant caravan.
Yep.
And everybody's talking about the caravans coming up, where the money is coming from, who's behind it, this and that. And there's all eyes on the southern border. And of course, every Democrat in the country is calling the president racist for ever considering that the border needs to have some kind of proper protection, a barrier, anything to help make mitigating the disaster down there any more feasible. And then, of course, at the same time, in 2018, up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you had elderly Somali refugees who had successfully petitioned the Democrat-run housing authority in Minneapolis for nearly $1 million to put up fencing, walls, and security measures around their apartment complexes to keep the younger radicalized youth out. Okay, because Sharia patrols were popping up on the streets of Minneapolis.
We talked about this, I believe, on the podcast.
We may have, because we started in 2018. But this is, you know, so while they were talking about how it's racist to protect the country, Democrats gave $1 million to people who aren't even citizens inside of the city of Minnesota to put up a wall around their own apartment complexes to protect from another subcategory of refugee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I would have to imagine, and I've seen a lot of especially black conservative and black independent minds that are looking at this, and they know that police brutality is a problem in this country that is being exploited right now. All right, it's being exploited. The other thing that is being hidden behind is the little known fact to the average American that there is a virtual army of young Somali refugees that are probably, you know, going out and causing a lot of problems right now. And people think it's just, you know, native black Americans. And it's not. I would even think that there's that at play at some point or to some degree.
I mean, it would make sense, right? Because, you know, Ilhan Omar's daughter was cheering this on, then saying she doesn't want violence. Of course, yeah. You know, that's the very thing that they want. So I love how the news is portraying this, though. Heated protests. Yeah, they're heated because there's fire, and they're not protests. They're freaking riots. And now it's happening in New York City. And
Denver.
It's happening everywhere. You know, they're burning cities to the ground now. This is the plan. This is what they want. Obviously, social distancing doesn't matter in this case because COVID is finished. And now they've moved on to their next tool, which is to burn the country down.
Yeah, people are going to be very surprised how quickly they don't hear anything about COVID nearly as much. Obviously, when school comes back around in September, we'll start talking about all the precautions people are taking. But for the rest of the summer, it is protest season. And as I said, all the rest of this week, Tracy, if it weren't the race riots, if you think that Pride Month was going to be held down by COVID, an entire month of virtue signaling that starts on June 1st, you think that those parades aren't going to happen? Come on.
Yeah.
They'll cancel 4th of July. They're not going to cancel anything really significant with Pride.
No, it doesn't seem like they really care about that at all. As a matter of fact, what's crazy, too, is the mayor is pointing the finger over at President Trump in Minnesota.
Why not? Of course.
Here.
Hold on. Common sense.
Whoops, that's not it. This is it.
Starts. This is the President of the United States tweeting just a little bit ago. What's your reaction to that?
What was the other tweet?
There was an earlier one calling you a radical leftist and a weak mayor. And to get things under control, and I have it here, I can't stand back and watch this happen to a great American city. A total lack of leadership, says the president. Either the very weak radical left mayor Jacob Frey get his act together and bring the city under control, or I will send in the National Guard and get the job done right. That was the first of two tweets from the president.
Well, let me say this. Weakness is refusing to take responsibility for your own actions.
Right.
Weakness is pointing your finger at somebody else during a time of crisis.
Because for some reason, the President of the United States is responsible for an officer in your city killing someone.
Yeah, yeah. An officer in a city where, you know, I was looking, I examined the entire city's government, too. So not only do they have this guy, Fry, who was on city council prior to becoming mayor, but the entire city council is a 13-member council. It is 12 to 1 Democrat, yep. Union Socialist. That one outlier is a Green Party member. There is no trace
of
conservatism, of MAGA. There's no trace of anything. The police department is completely run, and all their policy is set by people with Fry, like Fry. You know, and what the president was just being blamed as of 4 days ago. All everybody was talking about was if the president had just acted 1 week sooner with COVID, there wouldn't be 100,000 people dead. So that's what he was. So as of 4 days ago, he was supposed to be in his lab coat trying to figure out the pandemic. And now he was responsible for a Minneapolis police officer who parked his knee on a man's neck for 15 minutes. It's unbelievable to me.
I don't see how this guy can think that, like he said, oh, don't worry about the police stations. They're only brick and mortar. You know.
Well, yeah. In Baltimore, everybody had a safe space to destroy. That's just, oh, don't worry about it. It's not about standards. It's not about cohesion. It's not about rule of law. It's not about civility. It's only brick and mortar. We can always just rebuild society every couple of years because everybody have been reduced to the point of emotional children, emotional abused, emotionally manipulated children. It's fine. We can always just rebuild it every couple of years.
It's going to take far longer than a couple of years to get this city back to where it could have ever hoped to have been. Even, I mean, you know, like I was saying in the beginning, there are people now putting signs saying black owned business, please don't, you know, please don't burn me down because I'm black. just there's people crying. They thought they lost everything with COVID. Now they've really lost everything. I mean, and what's going to happen? They're going to want the federal government to come in and help them to rebuild this nonsense. But when does it end? Are they going to burn down the whole state? You know, when does President Trump have the authority to go ahead and make a move to stop this? And is that something that we should be even hoping happens, given, you know what I mean? It's just such a horrible situation.
Oh, I'm sure of it too.
So we watch Minneapolis burn down, basically.
Yep.
I mean, they wouldn't be able to pull this kind of stuff off in South Carolina, I'll tell you that right now.
No, they wouldn't. But you know, and the other thing is there too, the people who are defending their businesses, their lives, their properties. I know that there's a lot of focus in on whatever white guys that they can find standing outside of a tobacco shop. But even them, they were flanked by armed black citizens. And everybody is, you know, and then there are, and then of course, if you know where you're looking for your news and your local reporting, you see that black business owners are defending their property with guns as well.
Yeah.
And that this is there's so much here.
Well,
that everybody can come together on. And to be honest, at the very onset of this tragedy, there was nobody that was in disagreement as to what we had seen happen to this Mr. Floyd.
Correct.
Nobody was in disagreement as to what we had seen happen. But the Al Greens of the world had to go on in there and divide us by the very familiar lines that we live on either side of these days. So,
I agree. Look. Scott Adams just tweeted, and we were all in agreement until we weren't anymore because of this. They got nothing out of this. This is literally just to incite. Here is a reporter from CNN or MSNBC standing in front of a burning inferno. Listen to this.
Hold on. Unruly. I want to be clear in how I characterize this. This is mostly a protest. It is not generally speaking unruly, but fires have been started, and there's
you shaved scrotum of a man.
He's standing in front of burning buildings.
I'm telling you, it's the naked gun. It's the naked gun. Leslie Nielsen, please disperse in front of the firework factory that's exploding. Nothing to see here. Please disperse. It's beyond parody.
It looks here too like Minnesota police have arrested a CNN reporter and his crew as they report. Here.
Absolutely not. I mean, the state police are going to have a lot to answer for with this arrest here. It didn't make any sense to me. I mean, he's standing there. He identified himself. You can see his credentials. You know, just move him to where you want him to be. I don't know where the person in command of that platoon is, but that's an individual who is definitely not taking charge. There's no way something like that should occur.
So they're arresting CNN journalists, which I can't say.
It's like, finally.
I know. We've been wanting this forever. So
this is what it would take.
They're arresting journalists.
You know, we thought the leaking of classified information was going to do it.
We're joking. Goodness knows. You see what they did to Dilly the other day, right?
What?
Oh, I'll show you in a second. But they'll do that to us, too. So we're kidding around. But basically, they're arresting the journalists, but they won't arrest the people burning the buildings down. I don't understand.
Yeah.
So Dilly, just to kind of break off real quick, my mom sent this to me. My mom. He was clipped by Right Wing Watch, his show. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
I don't give a f- about being factual. This is political entertainment. I make f- up all the time. I've told you that. Fuck. Like, we don't want to be fake news. I don't give a f-. It's
I'm
not
gonna
my objective.
Censor
my objective
it.
Is to destroy Democrats. Okay? Destroy liberals. Liberalism as an idea. Democrats and anything that opposes President Trump. That's my goal. I've never made any bones about that. So I promise you don't have to fact check me because I don't give a f-.
Yeah. Well, last night I did a stream with Dilly and our buddy Adel, and he had mentioned that that he had said something like that. But I didn't know that it was something that was highlighted by Right Wing Watch.
Yeah, we got to finish it because it's funny.
Okay, go ahead.
All the time, I make up sometimes from time to time. I don't care. I don't care. Democrats know it. Republicans know it. I don't mind admitting it. I don't give a this is political entertainment. There's a difference. I'm not Tracy Beans. I do my best to break down news in a concise and honest way when it's relevant. But when I get a chance to on the left, I don't mind making no, not at all. Not at all. Go ahead. You can play that one, Right Wing Watch.
and they did. See, that's the whole thing. That's the whole point here. And that's why I said before, Tracy, you know, you said, oh, well, I can't comment on certain things. I'm like, well, I can, because what the hell am I? I just, you know, I'm looking at that and what Dilly was saying, I know where he's coming from in saying that, because last night he put a lot of context to it when we were talking.
Well, they took it completely out of context. Yes.
Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter if he sandwiched that in between big, thick slices of context. It doesn't even matter. Because, you know, what he was pretty much saying is that you're not going to win an argument, and there's nobody that is looking to be engaged in some kind of a teachable moment or whatever. There's a disconnect that's never going to be sewn back together. So it's just like, why not just be a complete, you know, caricature at some points and just have a good time and make people chase their tails and drive them nuts a little bit, because there's nothing else that's going on. When it comes down to brass tacks and you have to get down to the base of an argument or something like that, then you can get serious. But come on, look at the clown world that we're living in here. We just listened to an MSNBC or CNN reporter that's standing in front of an inferno saying that it's a moderately calm protest.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the entire world's a parody.
This is what I've got for you, Frank.
All the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist, you're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs, fuck you.
Andrew Breitbart.
Yeah.
Too bad he was a decade before his time.
Yeah, he was. Well, he should have been here for the whole thing.
Yeah, he should have. I'm gonna write down for Jerry. Timestamp. 17 minutes through end of show. Please censor out every bad word.
Oh yeah, this was the most profane show we've ever done so far.
Yeah. And it's not even us.
I know, it's all Dilly's fault.
Dilly in his potty mouth. That's right. So my mom sent it to me because he mentioned me in there. Of course. I'm like, figures. Anyway, so there's that. So there's more stuff going on. We had the executive order yesterday, Frank.
Yep.
Which I actually am surprised that I am absolutely 100% on board with.
Well, yeah, because he's not legislating from the Oval Office. He's pretty much just saying, hey, enforce the law that's on the books. This is ridiculous that we actually have this provision on the books, and it's a really, really great distinction between one type of business over the other as far as shielding oneself from liability at that point, a brand new forum, which is the internet, which is so open and so wide that was going to have to people are going to have to be protected for, you know, the what was essentially, as they say, a digital bulletin board. Who is going to be responsible for what any number of tens of millions, hundreds of millions, billions of people at some point, which we are at now, and now that are contributing to that bulletin board? So what are you going to be? And especially as it applies to large companies that are essentially in control of the mechanisms through which we engage with each other, that we engage in political discourse now. That's just exactly what it is. And they have been supremely influential in every election since 2008. So I've had a very hard time sticking to just a free market solution to this problem. I think that we're talking about the end of whatever's left of free society if this is not tackled immediately.
Yeah, and you know, again, by just saying, like, okay, you want to be a publisher, then we will sue you, and millions of people will sue you because of that, and they'll go out of business.
I saw one person. I don't know if you've heard this. You probably have. I heard, this was on a CBS news brief last night when I was listening to one of my talk radio shows. Yeah, it was one of those nightmarish things because they brought this up and they said, what President Trump doesn't understand, or what President Trump doesn't seem to understand, is that if it has become a publisher or a platform, he could have his, it could actually backfire because his tweets could be taken down if it is considered libelous. So they're, so already the media is throwing on up there that, yeah, sure, you can hold these platforms accountable for trying to have their cake and eat it too. But if you're going to hold people accountable at Twitter of being a platform and not a publisher, then that means that you're going to open up liability for the president himself.
He can just
to be,
leave and go to another platform, and then Twitter will go out of business.
It could, but at the same time, it's like, all right, yeah. So yeah, perhaps somebody out there, and you know, many people would throw a libel lawsuit at the president. But what about every little other person? Let's say somebody on a 40,000 subscriber account or something, a verified, a check mark, somebody, a small journalist from, you know, Mediaite or Daily Beast or something like that. If they print something that's libelous or something that is that incites violence, like we see happen all the time, how many people will immediately be chased off of, you know, it's one thing you can take out the president, but you'll also be taking out
everyone else. Yeah.
Everyone else.
I've been libeled by people on that. That has happened to me. They do it all the time. The whole Russia thing was a big freaking fat lie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, but they didn't get libeled. They got Pulitzer Prizes.
Yes. Yes. But this basically means, like, I'm sure Twitter will have something up their sleeve. But wouldn't it be nice, Frank, if they would just take their stupid algorithms, just let everything be as it is, and just let the chips fall where they may? You know why they won't do that, obviously.
Yeah.
We'd win. Over and over and over and over again. They'd lose all control that they have, and we would win.
They would lose the arguments. They would lose the joke game. They have no humor. They have no arguments. And they have a very shallow, manipulative view overall of history, not just this country, but world history. It's something that would fall and collapse under the weight of its own incompetence, and it's evil if they didn't have a massive amount of people propping them up. I keep saying, you know, the media as it exists right now is Bruce Willis from Death Becomes Her. And it just he's just trying to keep these rotting corpses looking presentable all throughout the movie.
I like that movie.
It's a great movie.
It is a great movie.
So it's a dark one, but it's awesome.
I saw that when I was a kid on Laserdisc.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
So, I had the VHS.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, those were good, too. Rewinding them in that rewind machine, or holding the play button down while you rewind just so you could see what it looks like. Mm-hmm. That was fun. The perfect explanation or perfect example of what you just said about the liability thing, right? Ted Cruz posts, okay, Charles, you want a legal debate? Cool, because Charles Cook says Twitter is immune from being sued for things that third parties say on its website. Twitter is not immune for being sued for things Twitter says. This is also true for CNN, which can be sued for its speech, but not its commenters. And then Ted says, you want a legal debate? Cool. If you, a third party, write an op-ed in New York Times and it's defamatory, the New York Times can be sued. If you post identical defamatory op-ed on Twitter or Facebook, they can't be sued. That's Section 230. Congress did that because the platforms were neutral. Now they are not anymore. And then Someone comments, real Donald Trump would cause Twitter to be sued every day, 20 times a day. And then Don Cheech says, not if they stayed neutral, which is the effing point. In other words, Twitter can absolve itself of any liability at all if they would just play fair.
See, it's funny. It's so hilarious to me because you're just watching these broken animals. They can't get out of their own way because there's only one way to see the world. It's the same. So you say, well, but it keep coming down. No, not if you stay neutral, because neutrality is not only not an option, it doesn't exist.
Right.
They believe that that where they are, from where they are standing, it is the only place to be, which is the reason why I always say it's hilarious to hear people talk about, thank you so much. Lauren just brought me iced coffee. Thank you, Lauren.
Lauren is the best.
There she is, pregnant Lauren.
Beautiful pregnant Lauren.
Gorgeous. She's gorgeous.
Aw.
She found a new way of sleeping last night so that her back doesn't lock up over the course of the evening.
Do you have a pillow?
Oh, several pillows. Oh, I woke up. It looks like she was sleeping on the north slope of a mountain. So how you feeling, Laura? Pretty good. So she's feeling
Woo-hoo!
Pretty good. Okay. Well, either way, I was saying,
stand is the only place that, you know, they're.
Yeah. Well, it's the same reason why with the taxes and spending, when somebody says we're going to have a tax cut, they say, but the debt is going to explode, though. Why is that? Because never in any version of this reality would they ever consider stop spending.
So
when they say, yeah, but yeah, everybody's going to be taken down. Well, not if you're neutral. What's neutrality, though? What are you even talking about? They're nuts.
It's crazy. Two things real quick before I get to this PragerU video, which exemplifies your point. The White House just tweeted, these thugs are dishonoring the memory of George Floyd, and I won't let that happen. Just spoke to Governor Tim Walz and told him that the military is with them all the way. Any difficulty and we will assume control. But when the looting starts, the shooting starts. Thank you. This is from the White House Twitter account.
Yeah.
I swear, Frank, in 15, 20 years, we're going to be talking to our kids.
You don't know what you missed.
You have no idea what the hell happened.
Your children, they're pretty awake. I mean, they're going to have a lot. I think both of your children are going to have plenty to remember that in 15, 20 years, they will just merely be able to start putting context to what they saw.
Yeah, I keep telling them that. I keep saying, you don't understand right now what this means. But when you get older, you're really going to understand what it means. And then it's going to make sense to you.
Me, I'm going to have a lot of explaining to do.
Oh, gosh. It's going to be like, you know, story time. You'll just sit around your little fire and you'll tell her stories.
You were born 1.5 months before the most insane election ever of our history.
Yeah. So back to the lefties real quick. Here is a PragerU video that it just came out. I hope it makes sense. He's on a campus trying to question a student.
So a leftist student on campus just called campus security on us because apparently we were terrorizing people and riling people up with our dangerous, horrible ideas. Let's see what these people have to say.
Hi, there are two people on our campus right here who are with a conservative group who are here to try to fearmonger students.
Oh,
PragerU. Like Prager University, but they're not an actual legitimate university. Well, they're going up to students and they're trying to ask them questions and such.
The goal.
Do you see their stuff?
Oh, yeah.
What do you
everything that you guys stand for.
What do you say?
Misinformation.
Like what misinformation?
Oh. Trust me, you guys are really good at it.
No, Tom, so we're just curious.
No, you're not.
I'm honestly curious.
No, you're not.
I'd love to know.
No, you wouldn't.
Well, that's why we're asking.
No, you're not.
I just asked you.
Hold on. Cop.
Who's talking right now?
It was Will Witt.
Okay.
But here, the cops are there now talking to the kid.
Mm-hmm.
He got the cops armed. Armed police. Here.
The reason? Because they're here to fearmonger students, and that's not okay.
Fearmonger.
Yeah. Because these are people who are coming in and instigating and terrorizing our students on this campus, and that's not okay.
Telling you that you can't leave the area? Are they threatening you specifically in any way?
Not specifically. They're threatening me with their language, with their ideals.
Unfortunately, I mean, if your ideals or their language doesn't conform to what you're thinking is, that's what freedom of speech is.
It's not.
So if you agree with something, he agrees with something else, they guys agree to disagree.
Dating you against your will,
right.
As long as they're not threatening you physically, they're allowed to have their opinion just as much as you're allowed to have yours.
So there's nothing you guys can do?
So that's freedom of speech.
So that means they're allowed to terrorize students by using
terrorize is the word that you're using. That's your opinion. I'm here to help you as much as you can, but I'm trying to figure out what law they're breaking right now. So I'm trying to figure that out. That's why I'm asking you. You just keep giving me ideas, your opinions, and the law is not about opinions.
Wow. Well, that's refreshing.
Yeah,
that's refreshing.
Sure was. Sure was refreshing. This kid is saying that he's terrorizing him with their ideas. They're terrorizing him with their horrible ideas, Frank. Terrorizing him.
It's terrorizing. Can you imagine that? Can't terrorize. Ideas are terrorizing. That is a low point if I've ever heard one.
Yeah. So now we're going to move on from culture stuff, Frank, and we're going to go to some, Spygate stuff. We're going to move to Spygate. And I'm going to find the clip that I had here of Carrie Kupek, who is the Justice Department spokeswoman, who was on with Sean Hannity the other day and announced yet another U.S. attorney assigned to investigate something in regards to the Obama administration and how they conducted themselves during the 2016 election here.
Has now appointed U.S. Attorney John Bash. There is a new probe, I understand it. What is going on?
Yes, so John Durham, as part of his investigation, had been looking at the issue of unmasking, and the Attorney General determined that certain aspects of unmasking needed to be reviewed separately as a support to John Durham's investigation. So he tapped John Bash, one of our U.S. attorneys out of Texas, to do just that. And Sean, obviously, we know that unmasking inherently isn't wrong, but certainly the frequency, the motivation, and the reasoning behind unmasking can be problematic. And when you're looking at unmasking as part of a broader investigation, like John Durham's investigation, looking specifically at who was unmasking whom can add a lot to our understanding about motivation and big picture events.
So there's more we'll listen to, but that is, again, a spokesperson for Barr, not the DOJ as a whole. That's Barr's spokesperson. Now, a couple things to unpack here. Number one, they're announcing an investigation. That's interesting.
Into this is the new guy, Bash?
He is new to us, but I don't think he's new. So they will never confirm or deny the existence of an investigation. It is just the policy. William Barr is a by the books kind of guy. So now he's got his own spokesperson on Sean Hannity announcing a U.S. attorney in Texas looking into the unmaskings under the umbrella of the John Durham probe. Right. That is now like the fourth or fifth attorney, U.S. attorney that we know of doing investigations into verticals of this case. I contend this is not a new thing. I think that they cannot keep it under wraps anymore. I think that this is something that they cannot keep under wraps anymore because there are going to be too many people talking and they want to get it on the record from their mouth to kind of quell the rumor and innuendo about it. Or it's part of a greater strategy to keep people apprised that there's actually something happening. Or if you want to be a pessimist, it's all a big show and nothing's happening.
I don't think, I'm not on that kick. I don't think nothing. I don't know to the depths to which the happening is going to go. And I hope it goes deep. But as I always say, I don't think that what we're seeing right now, then I don't think the layering of this kind of the layering of all the chaos right now is there to distract from something that is petty.
No, agreed. And I think that, he's got Jensen who looked at the Flynn case. I know there's someone looking at the Roger Stone case, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, that's true. There is Durham who greatly expanded his team internally there. And Huber, which we haven't heard anything about in several months. We have Rod Rosenstein, who's going to be going in to testify in front of Lindsey Graham, who listed off a number of people that he's given or will be giving subpoenas to. And then at the very end said, but again, if they're being used in the Durham probe, he has first dibs. So if anybody on that list does not appear or does appear and cannot say anything, we'll know a lot more, but I believe that is coming next week, that hearing with Rod Rosenstein.
Now, what do you think about this, about starting with Rod Rosenstein? Because I've seen a lot of people going, I've seen at least a handful of people that we both know listing half a dozen names that they would have brought in first and starting with that Rod Rosenstein again. So do you look at this by Lindsey Graham as something that is eye rolling and like dragging his feet and starting in a safe place that can eat up some time without doing anything significant? Or do you think that there is a real a tactical reason for getting him in first?
I think that I don't know if there's a tactical reason for Rod Rosenstein coming in first. I do think that there is a tactical reason why this is happening right now. Okay. But I also, first of all, don't agree with a lot of these people that are saying that Rod Rosenstein was some, you know, good guy. I just don't. I don't think he was. And that's at odds with a lot of folks, but that's okay. I don't mind being at odds with folks. And not only that, there's other stuff too. So he, you know, I'm looking for the tweet that I'm looking for. I want to know, do you remember when he said that doesn't, what I signed is not what's being represented?
Yes.
I want to know what the F he was talking about.
You would think that with the two and a half years that have passed since then, that we would have known.
Yeah, I mean, what is he talking about? So Lindsey Graham says this. He's asked, here, will you be subpoenaing James Comey? Yes. Andrew McCabe? Yes. John Brennan? Yes. James Clapper? Yes. Susan Rice? Don't know. Ben Rhodes? Don't know. I'm having Senator Johnson's going to look at all the things that happened from the election to transition, and his committee's going to look at all that. Four more yes, no's, I don't know's. Joseph Mifsud, don't know. Stefan Halper, don't know. Joe Pienka, yes. Steven Soma, who is he? The FISA guy, he's in charge of all the FISA warrants. Lindsey Graham says, yeah. Then he says, I want to put one caveat on the last two or three you named. I can't get in the way of a Durham investigation. So he has first dibs on any witnesses, which would be Stefan Halper, Pienka, and Soma. Now,
can't get in the way.
Remember what Devin Nunes said on our show. They don't even need to bring those people in to talk to them. They don't need to talk to Brennan. And Devin Nunes is about to send over a whole bunch more referrals, criminal referrals, for the Mueller investigation.
Yeah, that's right. He was pretty much saying that, you know, we're ready for news to break that there has been indictments delivered.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to do is sit around and listen to another damn hearing of anything.
Listen, I'm going to listen to it because, you know, goodness knows what will come out in there. But you're right. I mean, it's like, enough is enough already. Let's listen to the rest of the clip from the spokesperson.
Oh, but my sources now carry for years that there have been unmasking at an increase of threefold in the second term of the Obama administration. I've been told that even members of Donald Trump's family have been unmasked. Maybe members of the media have been unmasked, that there is a lot more that has taken place. Will the DOJ now look further into that issue? Why would there be a threefold increase in unmasking in the second term of the former president?
Well, that's why the attorney general determined that it was appropriate to look at unmasking as a support to John Durham's investigation and looking specifically at episodes both before and after the election. And like I said, you know, the frequency, who was unmasking whom, all of these circumstances and events can shed light on and give us a better understanding of what happened with respect to President Trump, his campaign, and then, of course, what happened after he was elected as well.
So I don't know how anybody at this point, this is like, I always say this, some people, they'll start indicting folks and they'll be like, this is all for show. This is just to make us think something's happening.
Yeah, when the actual indictments are out.
Yeah.
Or when some people go to jail, this is all for show.
Yeah,
happening.
They're going
to
say those indictments, you know, the look at the U.S. attorney or look at the U.S. attorney who's in charge of the case. They're not a good U.S. attorney. This is all just to make us think that people are going to go to jail and then they won't. You know what I mean? People are done. Well, they're finished waiting. They really are.
Oh, I know. And I don't blame anybody. I don't. Honestly, I do not. I understand. Some, it becomes very obnoxious for me at times when just trying to think of the possibilities and all you're met with is nothing's happening. Nothing will happen. Like,
because you can't even talk about it.
You can, yeah, because you say, okay, well, obviously I hate seeing that there is no conversation to be had with a person before the conversation could even start. It's like, okay, well, that's all right. So I could just skip over this person. Or not only that,
you can't even, like, I feel like my, you know, my job is to do this. And then I put stuff out and I put information out and I report things and people get mad at me.
Well, it doesn't. Well, either way, like I was saying, I don't blame anybody for having those black pilled moments.
Yeah,
I don't blame anybody. I wish that there was a way that we can look at the lighter side of things and try to keep focus on things that are a little bit more productive. But I don't blame anybody for saying, oh, to hell with this, I'm done listening, and wake me up when the indictments arrive, because I am, for the most part, I mean, I pay attention when there's little, when there's big updates, like what Richard Grenell has been doing at the DNI until Ratcliffe came on in. You know, I see all the big changes and I see the headlines and I take note of them. But other than that, I'm so past the nightly examining of evidence. I'm so past it all. We understand what the hell happened. Now it's just, is the process going to be muddied, or is the process going to finally produce a result? So, you know, in 2017, I think that everybody knew in our stomachs that this is all nonsense. The president did not commit treason to win. But we still needed all the pieces, and we got the pieces, the most significant pieces, so quickly. From the leaking of the memos to get the special counsel started to everything else. And you can just see what is the motivation behind that. Well, if you're human, then you can understand and you can make some really good, you can speculate in fairly accurate ways if you're going to be honest with yourself. But at this point, now that it's June 2020, yeah, I understand why people are done.
Well, they're going through the process now. It's all happening in a very meticulously planned out fashion, in my opinion. So Grenell is fighting back and forth with freaking Eric Swalwell.
That was great.
Did you see yesterday? I mean, back and forth and back and forth. And Eric Swalwell is saying things that aren't true. Journalists are saying things that aren't true. Grenell is giving them direct quotes saying that the stuff they're saying is false and they won't change it. We have sources. I'm the guy, dude. I'm your source. It's not true. Like all kinds of stuff. So one last thing to close out the show on that I was trying to finish up before we started here. Last night, late at night, at 10:54 p.m., a notification bell went off. There was an update in the case of General Flynn. And I expected to see it was a motion to file amicus brief. And I was expecting to see some left-leaning CNN lawyers. But what did I see, Frank? What did I see?
What did you see?
I saw a brief filed by Dan Backer, who is a right-leaning, conservative-leaning attorney who I know personally. Let's see another name on here. Margot Cleveland, Ronald Coleman, Steve Gordon, Trey Gowdy, Douglas McCullough, Wayne Rich, Kevin Sharp, William Shipley, Bill Webb, and Leslie McAdoo Gordon. Names we all know because they are friends of the cause.
Mm-hmm.
And they filed a brief in support of, well, they filed a brief to explain to the court why they must dismiss this case. And it is.
Well, that's great. Yeah, that's great. We have at least there's that presence involved here.
Yeah. So I read it, of course. And it's of course, it's fantastic. It is, you know, all the case law, why the former Watergate prosecutors, as they call themselves, are completely wrong. And it's 23 pages, which I won't get into completely, but a lot of people are asking a couple different questions. Number one, why are they filing this when there is a writ of mandamus waiting to be ruled on in the other court? Or why they file it here and not there. And the reason they didn't file it over there in the DC Court of Appeals, basically, is because they did not invite outside amicus curiae to input into that decision. They invited the Justice Department to file and the judge to file. The judge's response is due Monday to the DC Appellate Court. At the same time, this case, the original case is still apparently accepting briefs, because if, depending on how that goes, they may continue here. So they filed on that case, and they go through and take apart the Watergate prosecutor's arguments that are all based on propaganda, basically. They don't use facts from the case to make their arguments, and they focus too much on the facts of the case and not enough on the precedent and the constitutional issues before the court, because it's basically a power balance. If the judiciary starts deciding that they're not going to accept a declination of prosecution from the executive, it is a constitutional crisis.
Right.
And I'll do a breakdown of this today, probably on YouTube.
I was just going to ask you to go live with that.
Yeah, I will go live with it later on. Yeah, because it's just too much to do in 10 minutes and 8 minutes. I'm sorry. And a lot of people want to hear, you know, some people like the detail.
The devil's in the details.
The devil is in the details. That's
what's this?
Sure.
I'm looking at some trending. Van Jones says it's not the racist person in the KKK that we have to worry about. It's the white liberal Hillary Clinton supporter walking her dog in Central Park. Hey, really?
Can you say that again?
Van Jones just said on CNN, it's the white liberal Hillary Clinton supporters we have to look out for. Wow. Wow.
Van Jones is a racist.
Well, listen, I agree with him on that one.
I mean, I've been looking out for those people for years.
I mean, listen, this is what Malcolm X spoke about. The white liberal, the white handsy liberal, that is the fox.
Look, if you look at this in a timeline standpoint, right? I feel like this is like, so Joe Biden insults every black person on the face of God's green earth the other day. Completely loses so many people. And then this happens.
Yep. Oh, no, the turn of events, Tracy, is nothing short of amazing. The turn of events and the switching away from where we're at. You know, I said it last night when I was thinking about this, especially the Joe Biden thing. Isn't it amazing how just last week we had Joe Biden on the Breakfast Club pretty much go out and tell anybody who has a tan darker than mine that you're not black if you don't vote for me, or if you're having problems thinking about what you're going to be doing and who you're going to be voting for this November. And now I said, I don't even have to see it. I don't even have to see it. I know that thousands of people on their Facebooks, in their private text messages, in their on their Twitters, I know thousands of people have said something to the effect of, well, after what's going on, obviously making reference to Minnesota, after the events of this week, if you still don't know who you're voting for, then you really aren't black. I know it. I know. So it's just amazing how all of this stuff happens. And it's just like, is Joe Biden going to be, is he going to be, his words going to be rationalized because of this, this monstrous turn of events out there in Minnesota now?
How could you rationalize? I mean, it's a Democrat freaking stronghold.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Nobody looks at that rationally to say, okay, there's Democrats that control literally everything. The only non-Democrat I can find in the city government was a Green Party member who's probably farther to the left than the other 12 city council members. So I'm looking at this, and God knows who their sheriff is. God knows who the sheriff is, but I can't imagine it's going to be much better. And I'm looking at this, I'm saying, do people, can they really not get out of their own way and assess that, is it really so that this cop, is he really like the enemy behind the gates or something like that? Is this some MAGA country guy that is just happened to be there and just wanted to go out in the middle of Democrat Nation in Minnesota and do this? Like, really? And even if he was some racist who was just like, oh, you know what? You know, let me, well, if I have an opportunity to kill a black man today, I'm just going to go with it. And what's his reasoning behind that? Because Donald Trump is in the White House in Washington, D.C.? He'll be immune. He could be emboldened. He'll be protected By whom? The only person that could protect or create a situation where kneeling on someone's neck is something you can do as a police officer and get away with it is the city council, is the sheriff, is your entire local government presence there. That's the only factors here. And there is not one, and there's no, not one shade of red, not a shade of pink anywhere.
Nope. No. And remember yesterday, Mike Freeman, who's the attorney there that's trying to like prepare the case, he said that there's evidence that points to a non-criminal, you know, that points to the fact that there might not be criminality in what he did, the cop.
So what does that mean? Is it accepted policing practices out in Minneapolis that you can subdue somebody with your knee on their neck?
I'm going to play what he said really quickly, and then we'll go through the statement and then we'll end. I just have to pull it up because I wasn't prepared for this one, but it's right here, so it should be easy enough. Hold on. Here it is.
It's a violation of my ethics to talk and evaluate evidence before we announce our charging decision, and I will not do that. I will say this, that video is graphic and horrific and terrible, and no person should do that. But my job in the end is to prove that he violated a criminal statute, and there is other evidence that does not support a criminal charge. We need to wade through all of that evidence and to come through with a meaningful determination, and we are doing that to the best of our ability.
So he said that. Sounds to me like there's other evidence. Where? I mean, what is he talking about?
I don't know. But from the only thing that we have to go by is this video. And if that's the main thing that they're going by there too, the only thought I have in my head is that there is some kind of police policy that allows, at least in this city, because like I say, every city, every town, they have complete control over the practices that are allowed to be employed by law enforcement in the communities that they work. But the only thing I can think of is that there is some sort of department policy that allows for this kind of subdual with the knee and the neck. It's the only thing I can think of.
Well, they did a clarification, which I don't think clarifies anything. He says, in a news conference today, Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman made a comment about evidence in the George Floyd case that is being misinterpreted. To clarify, he was saying that it is critical to review all of the evidence because at the time of trial, invariably, all of that information will be used. Evidence not favorable to our case needs to be carefully examined to understand the full picture of what actually happened. This happens in every case. The statement does not indicate in any way the horror that we all feel when viewing the video. That doesn't make sense. As in any case, it is simply a matter of adequately preparing for trial.
Well, I guess we're going to find out. And ultimately, it just doesn't matter.
I mean, it doesn't matter. It doesn't.
For those who need the clarification, the trend that we have been living with is that we are exposed to something that is disturbing. The initial reporting casts aspersions and draws conclusions and extrapolates that out to greater society immediately. That is the conclusion that is held on to, and that is the conclusion that is never let go of, regardless of what happens to people, whether there is wrongdoing or whether or not there was more to the story that we didn't know about, like Michael Brown and Ferguson. You know, that was the Obama administration and Eric Holder. There was five separate investigations that was committed to the Mike Brown case in Ferguson. You had local, state, federal. I think there was a military investigation. Forensics came on in and they could not find anything but evidence that Mike Brown had a real, real bad day, assaulting people, going after the cop, that it was not hands. They proved definitively, hands up, don't shoot was a lie, but it doesn't matter because the initial reporting, that's what I mean by it doesn't matter.
Well, so not only that, but even if they do arrest the guy and put him in jail, it's not like these people are going to stop looting.
No, 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 and I hate that people keep bringing up Martin Luther King Jr. too. There's this one quote that people are using to rationalize this behavior, and it was a quote of Martin Luther King explaining the mentality behind a riot. And I believe the quote was that the riot is the language of the unheard or something like that. And this is being used not to explain what you're seeing and being, but to almost like enforce and encourage it. Because if you think, even though I'm not a huge fan of Martin Luther King as far as his policies, and he, you know, he's a communist, but you know, I'm a Malcolm X fan here, but as far as his social persona and how he went about organizing communities, the reason why he was so effective was because he was able to create a real stark contrast between those who were marching peacefully with him and the police response. And it changed hearts and minds because of the optics. You know, there is no strategic value in going out and acting worse than those that you say that you're fighting against, unless, of course, you want a free TV.
Wow.
And that's where we're at right now. So there's a lot of backwards philosophy being pushed right now.
You have been listening to the Crazy Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Crazy Friday Val and the wonderful
Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. Until Monday.
Later.
This is A Place for My Head Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
You guys might know him from Puddle of Mud. You might know him from Operator. You might know him from Rev Theory. He's one hell of a guitarist, one hell of a songwriter. His name is Paul Phillips.
I don't want to say that, you know, I had it as bad as some people. I mean, I didn't even have it as bad as Wes. Like I said, you know, he wanted that stuff, so he kind of seeked it out and didn't mind it, you know. But, you know, that's what brought the drinking on for me, because it was actually when I left Puddle the first time and went to Operator, that's when I really kind of amped my drinking up, and kind of that allowed me to kind of get into a mindset of, okay, punch in your time clock, okay, put on your little silly rock star costume, go up there and jump like a monkey, look at all the people, you know, make your rock star faces, get off stage, shake hands, sign autographs, you know, and then I would be the life of the party, the after party, you know. That's when I started meeting like all my heroes, you know. And the problem was, is, you know, that it didn't stop kind of when I got off the road. You know, I would come home and like you said, with the like social anxiety, but it's just like, if you have like a broken leg, you know, and you're on crutches and then your leg heals, but you keep using those crutches and you keep walking, then your leg is never going to get stronger. And eventually you're just never going to be walking on your own because you're so used to walking on crutches, you know? So you're
right.
Muscles that allow your leg to walk are going to be completely gone, you know? So that's kind of the analogy. It's like, it works in the beginning and then it turns you on you. I don't know how many books I've read, like autobiographies or behind the musics or whatever.
Me too, man.
You know, yep. where you hear people say basically that it's like things work in the beginning, you know, it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Then it was sex and drugs. Then it was just drugs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, it has a way of sneaking up on you.
A Place for My Head with Brandon Thompson and Jerry P. Tuck can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.